You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Hanging out with Clement
on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So excited today to be hanging out with Pieter Dirk Ays. He is an actor, he's a comedian. Some of you call him a satirist, an author, playwright, you name it. This is one of the most significant figures in South African theatre. And his extraordinary body of work has been celebrated all over the country. It's been celebrated even beyond our borders. You go to Europe, you go to the United States. He has done incredibly well. He's published several books, right? He's known for his character, Evita Bezuidenhout. A lot of you will probably remember him for that character. And I'm so glad that he has given us an hour to get to know him better. Pieter, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Thank you. I was just listening to the description of that crazy person. Is that you?
That's you.
Okay, that's okay.
How's everything? How's Fanny? How's your partner? How's Evita? How have you been?
Well, first of all, Fanny is my cat, and Fanny is sick of me because during lockdown, Fanny kept on saying, get out of the house, I can't be bothered with you anymore. Everybody's on. But I mean, listen, I mean, we're all sort of taking a deep breath and suddenly thinking, are things going to get a little bit better now that we've all been vaccinated and we're getting boosters and we are looking after ourselves because it's become a way of life now? But I don't know. You know, they talk about a new normal. I don't think it'll be new and I don't think it'll be normal, but it won't be what we had. So let's just, as they say, keep your zip up and hope for the best. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true. I'm so glad we're going to know you better this hour. And I have to be very honest with you from the beginning. I was listening to the songs that you sent us. Yes. I know none of them, but I enjoyed...
That's wonderful, Clement. That's great. I have educated you, therefore, the four people that are the four singers, the four musicians, really changed my life. So we'll just go step by step, and then you'll start
yes. talking
about them.
Yeah, and we're going to play some of those songs in between our chats. I must congratulate you on your book. Many of us spent... the pandemic lockdown, stuffing ourselves with food, embarrassing ourselves during Zoom meetings. And you were busy being productive and going through your records of what? 40 plus year career in theater, compiling your latest book, One Man Shows, The Black and White Years. Congratulations.
Thank you. But you know what? You know, when you suddenly have time, and that was the most extraordinary thing, that literally in 3 days in March, 2020, my life changed completely from 250 shows planned for that year to nothing.
Sure.
Because everything was cancelled in 3 days. They cancelled from the Few God in Cape Town, they cancelled in Johannesburg, they cancelled in London, they cancelled in Holland, they cancelled in Berlin. And literally, suddenly, I was retired.
Forced retirement.
Sitting in the garden, and really, truly, I was quite shocked and very frightened. First of all, I've never had time to sit in a garden. Who sits in the bloody garden? You're on your way to the airport, you get on an aeroplane, you fly to Europe, you fly back, you're backstage, you're on stage, you write a new show. And suddenly I am looking into my garden and I look up and I see a tree and I think, when did that tree come here? The tree was there for the last 27 years.
Yeah.
And suddenly I realized that I've got to replan my life of an empty life. And that's where I started cleaning up the cupboards. You know, of course, I've got costumes from all the shows. You can imagine how many pairs of high heel shoes, how many dresses, how many PV Buerta, everything, all the costumes. So I spent the first month of the lockdown in the sauna, I call it, you know, the attic of my little house in the property, and sorted everything out, which was very good, the stage manager in me. But then I thought, let me get my archive together as well, because that's something one never has time to do. And so I thought I'll do it with the one-man shows.
Yeah.
You know, the one-man shows that I've been doing since 1981, and I have none of their scripts because they were not on computer. I have to type them out, and that'll keep me busy. And let me just tell you something. As I went through Adapt or Die, and Total Onslaught, Beyond the Rubicon, rearranging the deck chairs on the SA Buerta Panic, Cry Free Mandela, the movie, seven of those shows, and I just stopped every now and then. I thought, did I really do this? Did I actually get away with it? How did I get away with it? Was I mad? And then I suddenly thought, but all these things are 40 years old. I mean, this happened in the 80s. Mm. The fear has not changed. We are terrified. We are, as Democrats now, in a state of disaster. What a terrible thing to call a pandemic. It's a state of disaster. Yeah. A state of disaster is what happened when a volcano blew an island away. Anyway, the point is, I suddenly realized that all these reviews needed a backstory, and every backstory needed a sort of a political memory of what happened in 1981, 84, 86, 88. Yeah. And suddenly I had a book. Suddenly I had 488 pages of this book. And it's called One Man Shows, 1981 to 1994, The Black and White Years. And I've put it out. It's on my website, free to anybody.
Yeah,
the website is pdu.co.za. And Clement, I've had the most unbelievable reactions from people all over the world, people all over South Africa, people in prison who actually said, we are sharing this with us in the prison. We've managed to get it on one laptop, and the laptop is moving around. I wonder who stole the laptop from somebody, but anyway. I was definitely busy. One has to take it day by day.
That's fascinating. I checked out your website, and I'm going through the book myself. And thank you so much for making it available on your website. Let's play that first song. If you remember the song, you'll probably win a prize. It's fascinating. I've never heard the song before, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it when I listened to it yesterday. That's a beautiful one, Peter. It's a stage, it's a theater song, right?
It is. It is a song written by Stephen Sondheim, who I think in my life certainly was one of the great inspirations, a most extraordinary composer and a visionary when it came to writing music for theater. You know, musicals can be either be glorious or ghastly. I mean, if you have a wrong choice and you go and see a musical that really doesn't sort of get to your heart, it can be a strain. But all his work, all his wonderful musicals, A Little Night Music. This was from A Little Night Music.
Yeah.
And, of course, Send in the Clowns is like a theme song for the people that also are in my show. I mean, I am a clown with my clowns in the boxes with the different characters, and Send in the Clowns, because if you don't laugh, you cry. And that's why I love that song.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your childhood. Has Peter always been funny, always been a performer growing up? I was thinking, with the kind of parents you had who loved music, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I was blessed with parents with music. My mother and my father, both concert pianists and with choirs, and my sister Tessa, a concert pianist. So there were pianos everywhere in the house, and there was always piano music. And of course, I didn't practice. Hello, they said, can I play the piano? Yes, I was with one finger. I can play Nkosi Sikelel on a piano. But I didn't. I just knew I had to do something else. I couldn't also just do that, because they did it so well. I didn't want to compete with the people I thought were doing so well at the piano. And was I funny as a kid? I don't think so. I mean, I was just a very good little boy. I was very... I played with my little pinky toy motor cars in the garden, and... one day I got my granny gave me a little portable radio and a little gramophone. It's before your time, Clement, when we used to have little plastic gramophones, where we used to have a little, the lid was also the loudspeaker, and you could buy your 7 singles, which are these little 45 small little records, and play them. The Beatles, oh, yeah, my past, Slaan Die Fish Like a Hood Off the Table. You know, I grew up in a world where, If it wasn't nodded at by the National Party, it was communist and the devil's stuff. So I learned how to listen to Elvis Presley. You've heard about Elvis Presley, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. I used to listen to Elvis Presley under the duvet when nobody was hearing. But I had a happy childhood. Listen, as a young white South African boy, I was protected by apartheid. I must really admit to that. But my parents, being musicians, had wonderful friends, and not all the friends were white. Not all the friends were heterosexual, so I had an introduction to life through the most wonderful human beings, and I was very grateful for that.
Yeah, I want us to talk about when you conceptualized Tania Vita. You were way ahead of your time. I mean, the cross-dressing, addressing racism at the time. She was basically saying things you could argue you couldn't say. How difficult was it to do comedy and satire at the time?
Well, now when I think back, I think to myself, if I had to really have that question, then I would have run away. I wouldn't know how to answer it. I was so angry about what was happening to people that I knew, because people in the theater were not, again, the theater was non-racial, non-sexist. It was an area where you either have talent or you don't. There was no affirmative action, meaning in those days, it wasn't just white Afrikaners who survived in the theater. Anybody with talent had a chance. And I suddenly realized how badly people were having to live because they were not white and because they were not doing what was expected of them. And it was difficult. But then again, nothing must be easy. Clement, I don't want things to be easy, because then everybody says, we've been there. It's got to be hard. It's got to be dangerous.
Yeah.
And Evita was literally, it was, how do I say these things about the National Party? How do I say these things about apartheid? Because all the things are, you're not allowed to say these things. And also, you're not allowed to wear dresses. That was against the law at the time. I mean, men wearing dresses went to jail.
Mm.
So I created this Afrikaanse Tani, who was a member of the National Party. In fact, she was everything that I wanted to hit, and everything that I wanted to swear at. And I knew that Tani Evita couldn't use bad language, because she didn't. And that's why she survived for 40 years, because she doesn't say poop and cock. She doesn't say those things, you know, so nobody could catch her on those. And she was the first person to write letters to the Minister of Police saying, lock up Peter Dirk Ace. He's a communist, a terrorist, and he wears women's clothing. So I think the answer to your question, which is could be a long answer, but I don't want to waste too much time on this, is the fact that humor became the way that I survived. I wanted to make people laugh at their fear, laugh at these people that are frightening you. And the moment you laugh at your fear, how can you be frightened of that fear? Because that fear is also ridiculous. This one can kill you, but it certainly doesn't mean you must look away and say, don't tell me, I don't want to know. So Evita started in 1981. I never thought she would last for more than one show. She was not created to be there forever. But there was an election in 1981, and I needed this Afrikaanse Tani. But she came at the right time. Suddenly everybody said, what a wonderful, she reminds me of my mother, of my mother-in-law, of my teacher, of the Dominee Sofro. And suddenly everybody recognized her and enjoyed her. And so she became more than just a character. I had to find a life for her, you know, a family, children. Eventually she became an ambassador in a black homeland, which was wonderful because we could make fun of that. So it was making fun of something that wasn't funny, and that was politics in those years.
Is she still a member of the ANC? And has she been paid? Because the party's broke now.
You know, that's a very important question. Has she been paid? You know, I must find out. You know, again, is she a member of the ANC? I mean, first of all, Evita was in the 80s a member of the National Party. Then came this wonderful honeymoon with Nelson Mandela, and she was just too happy to be there. And she, in fact, addressed Parliament. She was invited to address Parliament in 1999, which was an unforgettable experience. You can find that on the YouTube channel of Evita's. And then she created her own political party called Evita's People's Party, the EPP. EPP, so, which I use every time there's an election. I use Evita's party to have voter education, just to remind people that the vote is sacred, the vote is secret. The vote is the key to the future of your life and your children's life and all the things that we need to remind ourselves of. But then I suddenly thought, she can't be in opposition. I mean, they've got Helen Ziller. She's Tani Helen. She must do what she must do. Let me get Tani Evita into the ANC, and she must go to the kitchen, and she must cook for reconciliation, and that's what she does, because she realizes that the way to a politician's mind is not through his brain, it's through his stomach. And as you know, the ANC likes to eat, so she's there to help them stick to a diet and be healthy.
Yeah. Do you think she's going to retire soon, or does she still have lots of time to go?
Well, you know, she's 10 years older than me. I'm 76 and she's 86, so she's 86. Okay, it's always nice to know I'm 10 years younger. I personally don't understand the word retire.
Yeah.
You know, when people say retire, I say, no, you mean retread. You know, you've got to, why must you stop because you've reached a certain age? If you want to, listen, it's choice. You want to stop your work, you've got your pension, you can afford it, yeah. But most people that I know who had to retire as teachers, my God, we need teachers. Wherever we are, we need teachers. So I have no intention of retiring. And Evita was saying that, no, why should she? Some of the most interesting people in our lives went on living. I mean, Nelson Mandela went into 90. I mean, people are Desmond Tutu, 90. I mean, come on, some people over 100. It's what you are within your heart. If you feel old, you'll be 13 years old and you'll be 100. So I am now 76 and I feel I'm 23.
I watched her interviews last night with the ANC Secretary General at the time, Cyril Ramaphosa, and even then President Nelson Mandela in 1994. Yes. And these are the figures that were critical at the time. They played a critical role, whether in CODESA, whether in just even uniting South Africa, because we were at a very important moment in this country. Are there figures that she's most proud of having sat down with? I mean, Mandela called her one of his heroes, and I was like, what? I thought she was going to faint.
Well, it was an extraordinary thing. Again, looking back on, it was Funny Galore. It was a series of Funny Galore for Mnet, directed by Peter Salier. And we put it together just after the election, the 1994 election. And I said, Evita must interview these new people. These were the communists. These were the terrorists. These were the greatest enemies of the country. They are now our leaders. Let us see their passion. Let us see their optimism. Let us share with them the future of South Africa, because, come on, there's a future ahead for all of us. And so I wrote letters to all of these very important people, including President Mandela, wondering, would anybody react? And, you know, they all reacted. Everybody sent me a email and a fax, or a fax, saying, we'd love to do it. We'd love to do it. And so I said, well, I tell you what, you take Evita somewhere where you would like to make fun of her. You know, you suggest where you want to do the interview. And do you know, Clement, not one of them said to me, send me the questions.
Wow.
Nobody said, you've got to talk to my lawyer. Nobody said, what is going to happen? What is she going to say? Nobody ever asked anything. I went straight to the front door, knocked on the door in my rock, all dressed and ready. The door opened and there was Joe Slover. Joe Slover, who in my Bura heart, I still thought, oh, you're a Joe Slover communist. What a fantastic South African. He just, first of all, he looked at Evita and said, Evita, at last. And he hugged her, and she hugged him back. And they had fun. And as you saw with Cyril suggested that we go to a trout farm.
Yes, I saw that.
In the west northern Transvaal, before Mpumalanga. And we caught fish together, and you know, we had the most wonderful time. And it's on the YouTube, and I'd like your listeners to go into YouTube.
Yeah.
All those interviews are on YouTube.
Oh.
And yes, and of course, Cyril, charming, and there we were in the river, in this dam, and Evita with a rubber, what do you call those pants you got to wear? You know, those sort of fishing.
Waterproof, thing. Yeah.
Not really glamorous for a lady with nice legs, but anyway, there.
With heels, I mean, and Evita Cyril had to take off her heels.
She'd take off her heels and put Platschuna on. And there we were, and the water's up to our waist, me, Evita, and Cyril. And the camera is far away on the edge of the... So we don't see the camera, but of course they've got zoom lenses, so we know we're being filmed, and they listen. So we've got to act. I can't say to Cyril, be me. I've got to be Evita. And there she's saying, oh, Cyril, oh, I'm so scared I might drown. No, Evita, you won't drown. I'm here. Cyril, can you swim? No, Evita, I can't swim, but I will save you. Well, I mean, that is just the most wonderful night in the world. He was divine. He was wonderful, and he was inspiring. And, you know, and I've actually wondered, that was 28 years ago. I've wondered if I could go back with Evita to these people, where they are now, and say, now, after all these years, what do you feel now?
How
do you feel? But people are scared of that, you know. They said, no. Nobody will do what they did then. That generosity of spirit is gone. That sense of humor is being hidden away. And that is what Nelson Mandela gave me. Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu gave the world a sense of humor. You know, politics with humor is life. Politics without humor is frightening.
Yeah. I really encourage the listeners to go check out the interviews. They're still there on YouTube. I started with the Nelson Mandela one with Evita Bezuidenhout, and my goodness. In fact, I have to say that made me appreciate Nelson Mandela even more. What a humble man. What a humble man who didn't really care so much about, thinking of himself as the center stage at the time. I mean, 1994, I mean, there's a part where Evita says, how does it feel to be the hero of this world? And he's like, I don't think of myself as the hero. There are so many other people who contributed to this moment. So he didn't just want to take the credit. Hmm? How many politicians today would just say, yeah, it's because of me. Me. It was really fascinating. So please go check it out on YouTube. You can check out the interview with Cyril Ramaphosa as well. I looked at it and I thought, really? This is Cyril? Still kind, still with humor, but a very young Cyril at the time, around 1994. It's 10:30.
Hanging out with Clement
on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock. I am hanging out with Peter Dirk Ace. And if you have got some questions for him, if you want to call in with a comment, you're welcome to do that. Some of you are sending voice notes on 0727021702.
Good morning, Clement. Please ask Peter to be honest, which one is his favorite, Cook Sisters or Co Sisters? Thank you, Donovan Jamiston.
So, which one is it, Peter?
What, Cook Sisters? I didn't quite hear what he said.
So, Cook Sisters or Co Sisters?
Kusester. Look, if you're in Cape Town, it's Kusester.
Yeah.
But Kusester is Afrikaans, and Kusester is more Cape Malay.
Yeah.
I think. Kusester. I love the Kusester.
Yeah. And I saw Evita was actually offering that to Nelson Mandela when she interviewed him.
Yeah. And he said how much he loved it. He loved Kusester.
He did.
And you know, she used to send him Kusester throughout his life. On his birthday, his 90th birthday, and it was on world television with Evita giving a message and giving the Cook Sisters on the message. And Bill Clinton was staring at Evita with a Bill Clinton look. You thought to yourself, what is he looking at, your daughter?
Yeah.
But yeah, Cook Sisters, and you said, yeah, but you see the smile. The moment you start with Cook Sisters, you start with a smile, so that helps it too.
I want us to talk about theater. That's something that you're really passionate about. You spoke earlier about how difficult it was when, you know, performances were being cancelled left, right, center because of COVID-19. And yes, you did some online shows, but that's not the same, really, without the audience. You've been in theater for a while, and I wonder how you think we're using theater as a tool to bring about social change. What do you think is the responsibility of theatre in post-democratic South Africa?
It's an interesting question because I haven't really got an answer to changing the world with theatre. What I think theatre, my theatre, is there to give you, my audience, a chance to sit down, forget about your fear, and then laugh at the things that you don't want to think about. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like showing people that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think it's very difficult to try and change people's minds in the theater. I talk about protest theater that we had a lot of during the years of protest against apartheid.
Mm.
And it was very, very successful, but really, frankly, a very boring theater. I mean, it was like, first of all, saying Free Mandela, which was illegal, which immediately made people nervous and excited. Okay, that's nice. And then Nkosi Sikelela tried to sing that, and that was illegal, and people get excited. And so usually you're preaching to the converted, the people who were there for protest theatre, supported the protest theatre. I want to go into Fontaine and Hoenderpaste Flay, and I want to go to Oumantani and all the people in the townships, which I did with Evita in 1999. We went on an election trek for 6 weeks, two performances a day in townships, in school halls, in city halls, with Tani Evita doing an hour performance for free to the people about voting and using theater and enjoyment to make people laugh and then realize that this was important information. Theater is essential for the survival of a democracy because theater also represents freedom of speech, freedom of choice, freedom of expression, and serious theater is very, very shocking in many ways, and that also represents the mirror for an audience where they actually see themselves, see the things that they've also been going through. So, I mean, to me, You see, the trouble, Clement, is that people have stolen the theatre. The politicians have stolen the theatre. Mm-hmm. I mean, politicians are now being the actors and the stand-up comedians. And the fact that Julius Malema is now going around restaurants trying to check up who is not South African mm-hmm. reminds me of what Adolf Hitler did to the Jews. He put a yellow star on the Jews. Hell's bells, we mustn't do that in politics. Sure, do that in a show to make people realize how dangerous it is and it leads to xenophobia. But we must also remember that theater is happening in politics. So sometimes I find myself being too political and not entertaining enough. I want a balance of 49% anger, 51% entertainment.
So how do you balance that when you draw inspiration? Where do you draw from when you write your material so that it doesn't become overly political?
Do you know, it depends on, I wished I knew how to find the answer to that, because you've got to test it out on an audience. It's not what you think, it's what they think. It's not how you react, it's how they react. And sometimes things don't work. When you do something in a show and you've got an audience and you do it and you think, here comes the laugh, and the moment happens and there's nothing. And you think, oh, yes, like. That means you've got to go and rethink. And so every performance is different because every audience demands a different energy. And a different passion. So, I've been doing this job for over 40 years, you know, and I'm sort of halfway there. I've still got a long way to go. You know, fame is not something that happens overnight. You know, it might look easy on television, but it's not easy. And success is a word. You can be satisfied with what you do, or you can just say, well, it was okay today, but tomorrow must be better.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, one of the things we've seen about COVID-19 is how it's just shuttered theaters worldwide. And I'm just thinking about your own theater, Evita Seperon, your very own, and it, you know, in Darling, what happened and how difficult was it to part ways with it? Because you ended up selling it. I mean, you built this from scratch many years ago.
25 years ago. Putting a theater in at the old railway station in Darling, people said to me, are you mad? Do you know, I was so happy because mad is good. Mad is good because nobody thought of it. If people had said, oh, yeah, that's great, you know, somebody thought of it. So you must be very careful not to do what other people have done already. 25 years of Evita Seperon, and in that 3 days of cancellations, I had to also cancel my performance at the Perron because of the COVID. And I had to close the theater. I had to close the theater because no audience meant no performance. No performance meant no income. And that's it. So I had to retrench my staff. It broke my heart. It broke their hearts. It was the most awful, awful experience of just saying, that's it. The censors didn't close me down. The police didn't stop me. Nobody stopped me for 40 years. But an invisible virus without a cure, without a name yet, has stopped me from breathing. And the lucky thing, and then this is the extraordinary thing, I was in a supermarket about 3 weeks later, standing behind two of my friends who opened a toffee business. Can you believe it? Making toffees in 21st century is just crazy. It's a world success. Everybody is ordering their toffees. They're doing incredibly well. Darling Sweets. And they said to me in the queue, they said, what's going to happen to the Perron? I said, I don't know. I think I'll just have to wait till somebody buys it and maybe puts up a store or have a room. I don't know. And they said, well, if you think of selling it, let us talk to us. I said, hey, I'm talking now. I gave them the keys. I said, go and look. And within a week, they decided they want to take it over. They want to buy it. They want to put in a bakery. They want to extend the museum. They want to extend the theater. Everything that I've done, they wanted to extend and protect. And it's looking so much, so wonderful. Really, everybody can come and enjoy the fun. And, of course, Evita is on stage every Sunday, and I'm on stage every Saturday lunchtime. So we've got the shows. The shows are being, you can check with Cricket, which shows are on where. So, you know, I don't want to say thank you, COVID, for letting this thing change gear, but it's a better place now than it was before COVID. It's really, truly being embraced by a young generation of energetic young South Africans. And that's very good. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah. I've got a call from Alexandra. Jackie, good morning.
Hi, Clement. This is Jackie from Alexandra. Danny, Evita had a perfume in the, I think it's late 90s or early 2000s, called Your More. So I want to ask her to courier me that perfume, because this is the relevant time to wear that perfume called Your More.
No more. All right, yeah, Peter.
But you know, in Africans, South Africans, more.
That's wonderful. Thank you. That is, okay, it's perfume. You know, all the film stars do perfumes. Elizabeth Taylor, Sophia Loren do perfumes. So I thought, a perfume for Tani Evita, and it's got to have a French name. You know, something like French, like L'amour, je t'aime, je t'aime.
Yeah.
And so Evita's perfume is called J'amour. J'amour, J-E-A-U-M-O-U-R, J'amour.
Yeah.
And she says, let me just give it to her how she says. She says, no, my perfume is very special. It is called J'amour. We also have a fragrance for men called J'amour Homme, and a fragrance for older women called J'amour. So there you are. A French word was spoken in your program, so nobody can say you have French word. There again, we have the humor, and it went into the market.
Yeah.
We sold it in the market. You know, it was extraordinary competing with Hugo Boss and all those things. But people would just come up to the counter and say, "I want Evita's perfume," but they couldn't say the name because they laughed so much. And you see, there is laughter again. Laughter helps.
Yeah. Here's another voice note.
Good morning, Clement. So excited to have Peter Dirkhuis on the show. There was a time when I was at Wits Drama School and he came in for a bit of a talk. It was years ago. I'm sure he's like done it more than once. At the time, he says he doesn't buy journals. He makes his own because he can create like his own structure and he doesn't have to follow like a template and whatnot. And I stand for that. Does he still do that is my question. Hello, Peter.
Oh, thank you for that.
Hello, darling. Yes, I do that. I still do that. I still try and reinvent myself every day because, you know, there's nothing as bad as old news. Nothing bad as something that looks tired, something that looks dusty. And it's not always 100% the first time around. You've got to, you know, it's like the little baby walks and then falls and bangs his head. So sometimes I still bang my head, but it's getting, it's still getting there. And yes, you know, that's what I keep on saying to everybody who wants to do this job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to also, I said, listen, it is the most wonderful job in the world because it's not a job. Mm-hmm. It's your life,
mm-hmm.
which means you work all the time. You don't depend on other people to do it for you. You do it because it's your passion and it is something that needs to be reinvigorated all the time with new energy and discipline. Everybody says yes, you must have parties and drink and none of that. I mean, you don't do that. You can't do that because you've got to be 100% every time.
Yeah.
And so it's hard work. Nothing must be easy, but it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But yes, thank you. That was a great question. I love that.
Yeah, we also have Conrad Koch on the line. How's it going, Conrad?
Hey, Clement, how's it?
Good.
Great talking to you. What a great conversation going on here.
Ah, thanks, man.
Hi, hey, Conrad. How are you there?
Great. Wow. This is so great to hear you. I have memories, similar memories that people are bringing up. Things are flashing through my brain like crazy.
Wow. Yeah. How's your little creature? Is he sitting there with you?
He's in his suitcase because I bring him out, then he's, you know what it's like.
He takes over.
I love it. He's in the suitcase and Tani Evita's in the boot of the car, you know.
Yeah. What's been your experience, Conrad, with Peter? Just share some of your anecdotes with us.
I mean, I don't even know where to start, Clements. I mean, it's a weird thing to tell someone to their face, but I mean, he's profoundly shaped my life, never mind my career. And of course, I mean, the shining lights for me at the time when I was beginning to do comedy and character work was Peter Dirkhuis. That was the satirist that I knew. I mean, there wasn't other satirists around. He was the guy taking risks and speaking truth to power. Sure, I was going to tear up when it was scary, and it was profound for me to have someone like that. I remember his work in the early 90s. He came to UCT when we were studying. Kagiso Lediga, me, Rivet Musa, we were all at UCT at the same time. And he came to a drama class, and he said, you know, if you want to make it, you've got to get your own show. And then I went to him after the lecture. It was first year drama. I was probably about 19 at the time. I went to him and said, hey, Peter, you know, we'd love to do it. We've got all this comedy and magic we were doing and ventriloquism, but there's not a lot of venues. And he got us in at his Evita Soperon, And I did a ton of shows there, actually. Some of my best reviews came out of the opportunities that created. And then, of course, just the moral conscience, you know, just always being there saying the difficult thing, even when it costs your kind of career. And he just was doing that at a time when no one else was. And the inspiration of that, I mean, it's just constantly, I mean, literally Chester Missing has ridden on Evita's coattails the whole way. I mean, there were times I remember doing the kind of generosity that this guy brings. I was at, did a show at Monte Cassino, and a lot of older comics, sometimes it gets a bit weird because you're moving into that territory and it can get a bit territorial. And Peter is the exact opposite of that. I remember I was going into Monte Cassino, and I came in. It's my first time at this amazing venue at Peter Tureen's Theatre. And there was a note just from Peter saying, or from Evita saying, just having a, oh, Peter, from Peter saying, have a wonderful run, darling, and just a wonderful little postcard just put there, just inspiring other artists. And I know there are other times where, you know, this work gets quite lonely because you've got to annoy everyone. There's no middle ground. And especially now, because you're annoying people on the left and the right. And one of the few people you can really talk to about that who has longevity in that story is Peter. And he's sat for coffee with me a few times and we've just gives the most amazing advice. So, sure, just kudos all the way.
Oh, that's beautiful, Conrad. That's so beautiful. Peter?
Yeah, man, lekker. Thanks, darling. That's great. Great, great. Look forward to our next coffee.
Yeah. It's 9 minutes before 11.
What? Hanging out with Clement
on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Peter Dirk-Ace on the Hanging Out feature today. Zapiro is also on the line. How's it going, Zapiro?
Hi, I'm well, thanks, Kenneth, and yourself?
I'm good. I've got Peter here. What do you want to say?
Oh, Peter Dirk is, hi, first of all, and you are my original inspiration, and that I'm sure goes for so many of us who are satirists, cartoonists, stand-up comedians, columnists. I first really became aware of Peter Dirk in 1982. I think I heard of him before that, but I happened to be conscripted into the army against my will, and I didn't have the resolve yet to be a full conscientious objector. I was refusing to carry a gun. And I then became aware of Adapt or Die, and I saw these like pieces of these skits. I hadn't yet seen them live, and then I could not believe the courage and the humor and the satire of taking apart somebody like P.W. Huerta and creating this sort of visual cartoon. And I actually was in the process of trying to become a cartoonist. So for me, that was a huge part of my thinking. There is a possibility of doing this, and then I actually, you know, later got to meet Peter Dirk and to see this parallel universe that he and she as Evita Poseidon had created at Evita Superon, and I had the honor of being introduced. And by Evita, to launch my book, appropriately called "The ANC Went in 4x4," about 20 years ago, and it was an amazing experience. Also, I mean, I just want to say about Peter Dirk. The idea of the parallel universe for me is so important. In fact, I've taken Peter Dirk's Jurassic Park and with acknowledgement, used it in my cartoons many, many times, because that kind of thing is exactly what I'm trying to do as a cartoonist. And Peter Dirk is always Peter. I know I'm just talking out, but you've always been such a support to me and to others who have run into conflict with authority. When Jacob Zuma sued me, Peter, you personally and your public statements always been hugely in support and with enormous humor.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. That's so wonderful. That is Jonathan Shapiro. Oh, that's these are the people. Some of the people you've inspired, Peter. You, when you look back at your incredible career, what are you most proud of, and what do you still want to achieve?
Well, I'm very proud of having survived yesterday, and I'm looking forward to surviving tomorrow. That's it. That's the most important thing. That's what I've learned in this lockdown period. Today is the most important day in every aspect, and if you really do it well, listen, look, be aware of everything around you, including the animals and the trees and the fresh air and the whatever. And then you will be strong for tomorrow, because tomorrow you start all over again. And I think the rat race has now run out of rats. No more rats in the rat race. You've just got to take it step by step and look after each other. And yeah. I think that's the good thing that happened in this terrible, terrible state of disaster, is we've suddenly become aware of how important people are for and with each other. So that's what I wish everybody, you know, strength and life. Have a smile.
Well, thank you. Thank you for making time today, Peter. And thank you so much for making fun of us. You've done incredibly well, and we're proud of you, and we thank you for your contribution, even at the time when it was uncomfortable to joke and take up on people, and you did exactly that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Clement.
Peter Dirk Ace.